director of New Jersey Sierra Club. We're representing Empower of New Jersey, which is a coalition of close to 70 different environmental communities and grassroots groups throughout the state of New Jersey that are calling on the state of New Jersey to take decisive and immediate action on climate change by putting a moratorium on fossil fuels. And I'm here today with many of our members and supporters. That's Smith from Food and Water Watch, Doug O'Malley from Environment New Jersey. And the first person I'm going to bring up to say a few words and introduce people is Agnes Marcella, who's been the leading battler on fighting the Southern Reliability Link pipeline. But more important, she's one of the founders and leaders of People Over Pipelines, which is an integral part of our organization.
Thanks, Jim. Again, my name is Agnes Marsala from People Over Pipelines in Chesterfield. And I want to introduce a couple local municipal representatives. But first, I want to also thank Sean Gregory from Mandy Kim's office for attending tonight to leave some information in the fight against SRL and these pipelines in New Jersey. So with that, if I could introduce John Kokobinski from North Hanover Township. Please, John, would you say a few words?
As I mentioned, or as Ag mentioned, we've been now I'm going to talk about North Hanover Township, one of the towns affected. We've been dealing with this issue, the SRL, coupled with actually Transco Williams. That was another issue. They were joint at one point in time. But unfortunately, I used the word unfortunately, that's spelled, but we're dealing with the SRL now. I'm going to talk about North Hanover, but North Hanover Township is basically, and we've got some residents from North Hanover, so they know, but we're basically a rural township with a substantial amount of open space, and most of the open space is farmland, preserved and non-preserved, and that's important. Just a little background. Ag asked me to make a few comments, and again, we've been dealing with this issue since 2015. It's a long haul. It's been a long time. North Hanover, by resolution 2015-40, the Township Committee of North Hanover urged New Jersey Natural Gas, NJ, to meet with affected residents and to consider, at the time now, developing an alternate route for its purposes, the Southern Reliability Link, the SRL pipeline project, that will cut through a portion of North Hanover Township, the Northwest sector, the neighboring community of Chesterfield through acres of farmland, portions of the Pinelands, as well as within 100 feet of hundreds of homes. And the purpose of the route is for 30 miles, 30-inch diameter high-pressure transmission pipeline. It would begin in Chesterfield Township and traverse North Hanover Township in Burlington County, Upper Freehold Township in Monmouth County, Plumstead Township in Ocean County, and Joint Base McGuire, Dix Lakehurst, before connecting with the utilities transmission system in Manchester Township, Ocean County. And I can tell you, through POP, Agnes, and the group, we've been to more meetings than I want to think about as far as state. These are freeholder meetings in Ocean County, Monmouth County, numerous BPU meetings. We've been everywhere and everywhere. New Jersey Natural Gas SRL pipeline will not, as a unit, provide natural gas service or benefits to any resident in Chesterfield, North Hanover, Upper Freehold, or Bordentown townships. I'm using just the townships that are close here because this goes to Manchester. However, residents would be subjected to adverse health and safety risks, economic, environmental impacts. As I have mentioned, at a substantial number of meetings with elected and non-elected officials. Public safety, health, and welfare must be considered first. And that is a paramount responsibility for all federal, state, county, local officials. That's my opinion. That's why you take an oath of office, is to protect residents. And we have data that supports this is not something that's really safe. Police, fire, and EMT services are essential. However, the purity and integrity of the freshwater wetlands is also relevant. They should be protected from random, unnecessary, and undesirable alterations or distributions or disturbances. The township of North Hanover is also concerned about the hazard this project creates due to the nature and the volume of the highly explosive gas flowing through the pipeline and its proposed route, which crosses through residential neighborhoods as the communities will be in the impact radius. When we talk the impact radius, we've done numerous studies as to, God forbid, what could happen if in fact there was a problem where this work would have an accident. And people are at risk. And it brings us back to, you know, I don't care if you're federal, state, county, municipal. It brings you back to your basic core, which is you're protecting the public's safety, health, and welfare. And, you know, you can define a lot of issues revolving around that, but it is what it is. Our constituents, those that have elected us to serve, myself as a local township committeeman, coupled with anybody upstream, it's the freeholders, it's legislators, state, it's federal, Congress, congressional, and the president himself and the agencies, they're responsible. So the elected officials that have, people have spoken, but unfortunately, and again, we're going through substantial meetings, and we're seeing issues, and I don't quite understand why they're timid to move forward. It just seems there's constant blockages and not sound reasoning behind it. So again, as far as I'm concerned, the residents in North Hanover, they do not want their general safety, water quality, or waste or wetlands destroyed simply for corporate gain, which we believe this is. So with that, all I can ask is be involved, try to inform as many people as possible. Again, we've been dealing with this since 2015. Good side of the story, it's not in the ground yet. However, we don't know. So thank you very much, and hopefully.
Thanks, John. And we're going to hear briefly from Rita Romero, the mayor of Chesterfield Township, who has been in the fight since the beginning. And one of the townships, along with Wooddale Township, are actually actively suing the gas companies.
Hi, good evening, everybody, and thank you so much for coming out. I just want to talk first a little bit about why I ran for Chesterfield Township Committee. And honestly, the main reason was this pipeline and compressor station. I started working with people over pipelines about 4 years ago. That's when I first heard about what was coming to Chesterfield, potentially, and also the other communities. I had a friend from Upper Freehold, and you know, she told me about it, but really before that, we had just gotten practically no information on it. So I was confused, a lot of the residents were very confused, and then we started to learn very, very quickly about what was possibly in store for us, and we were extremely concerned. I discussed it with a lot of my fellow People Over Pipelines members and other people in the community and decided that I would run for township committee because I thought this would give myself and all of the rest of us another avenue to be able to fight the compressor station and pipeline. I really knew I was doing the right thing by deciding to run, and I'm just going to tell you guys a little story, because I still can't believe it 3 years later. But we were trying to reach out to our congressman, Tom MacArthur, at the time, to try to get some help and guidance on this issue. Many of us went to his little town halls that he was having, coffee with MacArthur, I think they were called. So we show up at these. Finally, some of us were able to talk to him and ask him if he would be willing to come to Chesterfield to have a meeting with us. And we were thinking about a format of a town hall where all the residents could come and ask questions. He absolutely refused to do that. So after a lot of badgering, he said that he would meet with no more than six people, I think. And they could be some elected officials, some people from people over pipelines. So we took him up on this. So we selected, I think, six or seven of us. There's some people in this room who were there. And we sat down with him at Chesterfield. It was all like very secret. He demanded that it be that way. So we told him our concerns, and we're looking at him, for help. And he just said to us, I should say at the time, there was the belief that this pipeline was being built for redundancy and resiliency, the two magic keywords after Hurricane Sandy. So we all thought that, maybe that was true. Also, there was some talk that the joint bases were going to use, needed this power. So when we asked MacArthur about this, he said, oh no, this pipeline is to ship fracked gas overseas to the Ukraine because this is a good thing. It's going to help them develop independence from Russia. And I just think we all almost fell off our chairs. I couldn't believe this. But I think now, now that we're 3.5, 4 years later, it's probably very true, from what I can tell. So fast forward to today, it does look like, as John was saying, this is not going to benefit any of our immediate communities at all. We're just going to be subject to health and safety risks, and who knows what's going to happen with this gas if it comes in. So I'm in my third year of my term as an elected official. I'm second year as mayor, and we've been working very, very hard, and I'm really happy with the work that the elected officials have done with all of the organizations, most of which are here tonight. Let me talk a little bit about what we have been doing to fight this and what kind of in general elected officials can do. One thing that we've been doing is I started to have mayor's meetings with adjoining townships. So with this, we're trying to, speak as mayors together, tackle our problems and see how we can help each other. Even if it's a simple thing like doing, resolutions to help each other, we can do that and we have been doing that. We can all band together to go to higher elected officials. We've been doing that. We've been communicating with the freeholders on this issue aggressively. So I think that helps. It also helps being an elected official to open more opportunities to meet with other decision makers, such as the commander of the joint bases. So several of us, mayors and John actually, have gone to meet with the base commander a couple times. Don't think it did much good, but we certainly were very aggressive about getting our point across. And that also, educated us quite a bit, and we're pursuing other means, which I'll get into in a little bit, to, delve further into this and see if we can do anything to possibly convince the bases to reconsider their decision about this. Also, being an elected official, it really gives you a lot of power to rally residents to fight these issues, number one, legally, and to, if they opt in, to provide the funds for that. We can work with groups like the Sierra Club, PPA, Pinelands Preservation Alliance, joint townships together to really get a lot of good legal momentum going. And we have several lawsuits going, which I know others will address this later, but I think they're good lawsuits, they have potential, and we need to see them through to see how we're going to do in the courts. So this is, I think, where one of our big hopes lies. One thing I do want to mention, too, is that, you know, being an elected official also helps us communicate with our new congressman, where we're having a lot more luck than with the prior one. I can't thank the Andy Kim campaign enough for helping us already. Thank you, Sean, for coming tonight. And I know that others from your office have been in touch with us, and we've been sending everyone a lot of information to get everyone up to speed, because this is a very, very complicated issue. But I think that our congressman can help us with issues on the federal level, such as some of the ones we're dealing with at the joint basis. So again, as John reiterated, I thank everybody for being here and involved, and that's what we need to continue, because we all, you know, are in this together. Oh, I'm sorry, okay, good, yes. I want to mention too that Chesterfield Township did put aside funds, and you know, I think this is a really good project that I've been working on for the last like year and a half, to do baseline water, noise, and air quality testing, and also health assessments. So we've been doing this, we're almost done and wrapping it up. So this will be, we'll have all this data in our, you know, possession, and then God forbid, in case anything were to happen at the compressor station or, you know, down the road, if the pipeline came through, we would have this baseline data where we could go to court and fight things if something were affected. So, yes, thanks for that reminder. So with that, I thank everybody for what you've been doing for the past 4 years, and I ask that, you know, please don't give up hope, and let's continue, because we've delayed it this long, and I think we're doing very, very well. So thank you so much.
So, and that's why we're here, because New Jersey is in the middle of a climate crisis, and there are about 13 major projects out there that could have a direct and damaging long-term impact to the state of New Jersey. I wanted to start off and mention a quote that you should read from the governor, which is that the verdict is in, the world must act now to curb cataclysmic effects of climate change. In New Jersey, we set a path to 100% clean energy by 2050, signed sweeping clean energy legislation, and are protecting our land, our water, and our children. And our children deserve nothing, I'm sorry. That's what the governor says, but the governor, who's the most powerful governor in the country, has not kept to those words, and that's one of the reasons why we're here, because climate change is getting worse. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, because people here live with this on a daily basis. Every day, new reports coming out. There's now a scientific report on scientists, and it turns out that now that the scientists believe that there's a 99.999% chance that their worst assessments are right. That's from the, you know, so when you hear the other side say, oh, it's the science of unsight, the scientists actually put together a report of all scientists, and they came out with that. And the reason I wanted to mention is that we're seeing these effects, whether it's, you know, New Jersey being the warmest place in the world that can still grow cranberries, to fish living in storm drains on Long Beach Island, to 24 ski areas in New Jersey closing in the last 30 years, and onward and on and up, you know, and we have all these different you know, things happening, longer seasons, meaning more Lyme disease, more air pollution, more bad ozone days, and it's happening more rapidly. So that's why its urgency is becoming really more important than anything else. Yeah. So one of the reasons that we're here, and you know, we'll hear more a little bit later, but again, we have the most powerful governor in the country. He has more powers because of how our constitution is set up. And in spite of all that, New Jersey has lagged behind when it comes to greenhouse gases and regulating them. New Jersey has an authority. We've had that authority since 2005. One of the things that has troubled us, and one of the reasons we formed this coalition, is that when we met with the governor's office, first they said to us they didn't have the authority to regulate greenhouse gases. So I pulled out a 2005 rule, which is an amendment to the New Jersey Pollution Control Act, that says that the state of New Jersey declares greenhouse gases and CO2 a pollutant that impacts human health and the environment. They said, well, we don't know if it's legal. Well, here's the determination by your own, you know, department when they adopted that one. And plus, here's the court case that New Jersey was part of called Massachusetts versus EPA that the Supreme Court under the Bush administration ruled that EPA had the authority to regulate greenhouse gases, and their failure to do so was in violation of the Clean Air Act. And New Jersey gets delegated authority from the Clean Air Act to regulate pollutants. So there's another way. So that's been a big part of, you know, what they have. They have not done anything that passed in 2007, the Global Warming Response Act, that gives that requires New Jersey to reduce greenhouse gases by 80% by 2050. We've not done any work on that in a lot of years. In fact, if you look at all these power plants and that, which we'll talk about later, we're doing the opposite. You know, we have not put the people in the Highlands and Pinelands and moved them forward because of what's happened there and how they improved the pipelines when they shouldn't have. And they closed the Office of Climate Change and Climate Adaptation and Mitigation, and they're still closed. So there's been a lot of inaction, just like when the governor has not taken actions on the SRO pipeline. The Sierra Club and our attorneys and the other attorneys that are involved in the court case, we're in court, and I don't want to go into much detail about it, but we're in court challenging the SRL, challenging the Board of Public Utilities, and challenging the Pinelands Commission's what we believe was an illegal granting of this. And we've asked the governor, we've asked the BPU, and we've asked the Pinelands Commission for a stay, because we're in court and we're going to have our court hearings coming up in April. And yet, we have heard nothing from the governor in response. And that's one of the reasons why we're here. This is a list of the projects that are out there, just so you understand that you're not alone, that there are 8 pipelines and 5 power plants that are being either permitted or being coming in for permits across the state. People here should know that the PennEast pipeline, which was feeding gas into the Gordon State expansion to bring gas to here, we're still fighting that. That's moving forward. Northeast Supply Advancement, which is a pipeline bringing gas from New Jersey, with a big compressor station like the one you have here in South Brunswick to bring gas to Long Island. We have the South Jersey Gas Pipeline, which we hope will be knocked out. You know, BL England, which is one of the power plants there, pulled out. We've been fighting them for 21 years. And we finally said no. We're going back to 30 years. What we have to realize, it was a 21-year battle. We went after them in 1998 under the Clean Air Act and fought them ever since. And when they came up with the pipeline, South Jersey Gas Pipeline, we went after that as a part of the people here. And because we were going to go back to court on that pipeline, they decided that after all these years of delay, because we've been fighting South Jersey Gas Pipeline for almost 6 years, that after almost 6 years of delay, the market conditions have changed, and they decided to pull out. And because that pipeline is directly connected to that power plant, the reason that the Board of Public Utilities and the Highlands Commission gave for approving that pipeline is now gone because it's supposed to feed that power plant. We felt that it was still violating the Pinelands Act and everything else and was challenging them on it. But because of that, they're basically dead. The only reason I don't say it's completely dead is because until you put the dagger through Dracula's heart, these things can come back. And so, you know, the possibility is that Rockland Capital can sell it to another company to put a gas plant there. And so, you know, hopefully by June, which is our court date, it'll be done and we'll be dead, which will be a big victory, but we still have to wait till then. The Meadowlands Power Plant, which is 1,200 megawatts, which is making the largest greenhouse gas emitter in New Jersey after Chris Christie, that's supposed to ship its power to New York. But the thing that's interesting is that all these power plants and all these pipelines are interconnected. The Rivervale South Project, which is a power plant, is going to bring gas to the Meadowlands Power Plant. As you heard before, South Jersey Pipeline is to be a lane. PennEast is to Phoenix Energy Center. And then Transco itself has a pipeline running to the Keysby Energy Center and to Sewaren Center, you know, which is going to be gas from different sources. So they're all connected to pipelines. They built a new stub pipeline for the Keysby Energy Center. So they're all interconnected. And, you know, the point that we're here is that we need the administration to take action. You can say those wonderful words, but unless you stop these projects, it's all higher. That's really what it comes down to. And I wanted to bring Ashley to talk a little bit more about it. Because I think it's good, you know, again, they're focusing on the one project.
Right. We've heard a little about the South Jersey doing that SRL, Southern Reliability Link, which is the pipeline through the top part of the pylons, the one that we're fighting here. But I just want to take a minute and say that the Empower New Jersey Coalition, one of the reasons that we signed on people at Pipeline is because we feel that there's strength in numbers. And as Jeff just showed you, all those different pipelines, all those different projects, there are so many people in New Jersey. We're so concentrated, and they're putting so much gas through our state, we don't need it. We feel that, you know, if we band together, there are strength in numbers, and I see Linda here from the Franklin site, Station 206, and that's why we signed on, so that we can help others, and they can help us. That way, we help the whole state and the whole world, hopefully, you know, breathe a little easier. But this pipeline, as you most probably know, connects to Station 203, which is a Transco Williams fiasco, which they built at risk, and they're still being sued, and it's idle. It's been done now for how long, Mike? A year, and it's been sitting idle, which is great. It can sit idle forever, but we can take it apart piece by piece, and we can make field houses out of it. I'm sure there'd be a lot of schools that would like that stuff. So it clearly violates the pipeline CMP, the pylons CMP, which states that it has to service the needs of the people in the pylons. It does not. We feel that they manufacture the need clearly by directing the pylons portion through the base, which doesn't have a need. The most of the base is serviced by PSEG, so JCP&L cannot even hook up there. So we have these redacted emails, you guys want to take a look at them, since the beginning when they realized that they weren't going to be able to have a justification to circumvent the CMP. Somebody, because they've been redacted, we're not sure who, said, why don't you just run it through the base? That way the federal government, the DOD, can just sign off on it, and no one will be the wiser. Well, someone got a hold of these emails, and we're the wiser. So hopefully, once that false justification goes away, and hopefully people like Andy Kim can help us with that, and just like Bill England, their permit justification falls apart, and we have a fighting chance. Not that we're going to stop fighting in other ways, because we're not. You know, the pilot is the aquifer recharges 17 trillion gallons of some of the cleanest water in the world in New Jersey, and they want to ruin it. The Sierra Club is trying to stay this, as Jeff mentioned, with the BPU. They are, right now, New Jersey Natural Gas, they are also, they've begun construction at their own risk in the counties, in the areas where they have received what they feel is all the permits they need. Which is to say that the counties there don't feel, as Burlington County does, that just the fact that the construction in the right way puts the county residents at risk, their safety, health, their well-being. The county of Burlington is now in the process of suing New Jersey Natural Gas because the plans for this pipeline put it right down one of the major rural thoroughfares east-west in our area. So it will cause just major havoc. Plus, if we ever go, it's such a big pipe, if we ever want to do any other improvements in the right of way, we're going to be prohibited. Because, and that's some of the things that the Rockland County freeholders are fighting in court against. And we thank them for that. And we would be tonight at the Rockland County freeholders meeting thanking them for that, but we're here tonight with you, five people. But I urge people to go to the freeholder meetings and do everything you can. Support the Sierra Club, support Food and Water Watch, support us. We actually have our little 10-core member group, People with the Pipelines, is in court also against New Jersey Natural Gas. We're suing them on the CAFA permit, which is the coastal area something. Yeah, fragile region area, whatever. But we're suing on the CAFA permit. But the Christie administration weakened a lot of these permits. The culture at the DEP, it was just decimated under Christie. It took them 8 years, but they're finally like broken people. So we have to build them back up as well. And we have to, in my opinion, get the Office of Attorney General to stop defending the gas companies. We are in suit against New Jersey Natural Gas and the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection. And he is forced to defend it. So our taxpayer dollars are being used against us. I mean, it's just the circle of how we're getting screwed just widens all the time. So please, if you would like to, contribute to our defense fund, we'd love that. And also, after you hear from the other speakers, we have a couple of tables in the back. If you'd like to do a little tweet, we'll videotape that and send it to the governor. So thank you all for coming, and I'm going to hand it back to Jeff.
Thank you. We want, we win there because D.L. England pulled out, not because of the Murphy administration. And I talked a little bit about it before, just in a second, but we were in court. They pulled out. So basically, Rockland Capital, a hedge fund in New York, has done more to protect the Pinelands than the Pinelands Commission. And by the way, to answer your question, it was Nancy Wittenberg who went to the Joint Base and said, that's how you get around the CMP, by going through the
So
she's still working there, and we've asked for Murphy to fire her, and she's still there, and we heard back things like, well, they need a vet. In fact, one of the reasons why we're here is that the chair of the commission, who should have been thrown out day one and replaced with a Democrat, is Sean Erland, the Republican chair of Burlington County. Why is he still there? Why is a guy who's got a conflict of interest, why is a guy who's, in the pocket of the gas industry still head of the Pinelands Commission? Why is Nancy Wittenberg still there when she should have been fired day one, and so should he? And that's why, the point I wanted to make here is that we won that because of Rockland Capital and the pressure and the fighting we have at Rockland. That's why they pulled back. The other reason is that Orsted, which is an offshore wind company we've been talking to for the last 4 years, and they're negotiating to try to buy that site for the offshore wind farm that they want to build off the coast. So, that's why you have to keep swinging and keep fighting and keep going day to day. So let's go to the moratorium. So why do we want a moratorium? Very simple. We have to have a timeout from all these DEP permits and all these approvals by boards like the BPU, the Board of Promoting Utilities, because that's what they really have been, so that New Jersey can get its act together when it comes to climate change and preserving and protecting our natural resources. Very important. To do this, the governor has. I want to go to the next slide and then come back because I think it's a little disoriented. I want to go to this first and then go back. And the reason is this: in New Jersey's history, and I kind of kid that the Sierra Club is the oldest and largest environmental group in the country, and I think I'm becoming the oldest and largest environmentalist because I've been around long enough to remember these things and to be involved. So we were there when Governor Byrne put a moratorium on all development in the Pinelands until the legislature passed the Pinelands Act to protect it from development. You couldn't get one building permit in the entire Pinelands region. We also got federal law passed to set aside the natural reserve. Governor Kaine, a Republican, put in three moratoriums as governor. He did one on coastal development until new sewer plants were built along the coast because they were dumping raw sewage and partially treated sewage every time it rained into places like Barnegat Bay and into the ocean. And we were getting beach closings every time it rained, not only on the bays, but even in the ocean. So every time it rained, there was raw sewage going off of Asbury Park and the beaches would get closed. So he said, you can't build one more building along the coast until you build new sewer plants. And that happened. Governor Kaine also put a moratorium inland to inland plants because they were not upgraded to the highest level of tertiary treatment. He said, no new developments in all places in New Jersey, Wayne, you name it, until you upgrade your plant to meet the highest levels of treatment. And that was upheld, and that went forward. Then Governor Kaine, towards the end of his administration, put a moratorium on all filling in and development on wetlands until the legislature passed the New Jersey State Wetlands Law. So, and then the biggest one, the one that's most germane to us, is in 1990, Governor Florio came into office and there were proposals for incinerators in all 21 counties in New Jersey, costing ratepayers and taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars, pollution coming from them because you're burning garbage and you're getting all kinds of particulates inside. And he said, not only are we putting a moratorium on all new incinerators, we're stopping work on everyone that's under construction. He went on to then mandate that every town had to put in a mandatory recycling program and hit a 50% recycling mandate, that you had to recycle 50% of your waste. And that was Governor Florio. So the reason I'm saying that is that New Jersey has had this history when there is a major environmental problem, the governors have stood up and said no to development, no to until it got fixed. Now let me go back to this slide. So part of our moratorium is to say to Governor Murphy, be like these other governors. And by the way, those three governors, plus Governor Whitman, all did an op-ed and sent a letter to the Pinelands Commission against the South Jersey Gas Pipeline, too. So, you know, they've been on our side on this issue as well. So we want a moratorium in effect because a moratorium can't last forever until the state of New Jersey puts in the rules and standards to regulate greenhouse gases and CO2 and to be able to reduce them from existing sources. The governor hasn't shown any, you know, to do it so far, and we've been meeting with him and pushing him. We want the governor to use the power of the Clean Air Act, the Global Warming Response Act, and the Pollution Control Act to do it. We want the governor to be able to reject projects that exceed the greenhouse gas limits. And that's critical, because if you want to do something about climate change, you can go to San Francisco and talk about offshore wind, but unless you're regulated, just CO2 and greenhouse gases is a pollutant like NOx and SOx, sulfur dioxide, and any other kind of air pollution. You're not going to get anywhere. So that's a big part of it. And they say they're looking at it. We can go down to. Other things that we want, because we need to do this. We're in a climate crisis, and no matter what happens, if these power plants and these facilities get built, we're talking about a 30% increase in our greenhouse gas output, 78% from their electrical sector. Hopefully we're not going to get there, and hopefully we're going to stop a lot of this, but the DEP has authority that they do not do. Dealing with groundwater ozone, we have areas like this area where you're at ozone, but somehow they allow you to put in a compressor station that's going to release nitrous oxide and make your ground level ozone worse. You're out of containment. How can you do that? As an example, same thing with the power plants. Another weird thing, we have something called air deposition. You know, what goes up comes down when it rains. So air toxins coming out of power plants, coming out of compressor stations, chromium, heavy metals, that stuff goes, nitrous oxide, that comes down. And it actually gets to water pollution, and yet the DEP does not have rules in place to actually address that beforehand. And we want DEP to actually deal with that issue, because when you go into the middle of the Pinelands and you find high levels of nitrogen in your streams, it's from the power plants. You also find mercury in the fish from power plants. And that's why air deposition is important to regulate. You know, again, this is going to sound bizarre to people, but last year the governor signed a bill that came out of his front office. It was part of the nuclear subsidy bill that actually put a cost cap on solar, saying that if the price of solar goes up so much, you set aside the renewable portfolio standard for the year, and that means you don't have to go forward with clean energy projects. There's no cost cap on gas, coal, oil, nukes, but there is on clean energy. And what that means, if we don't fix it, we're going to crash the solar market later this year. And so we want that cost cap removed, because we need to move forward on solar if we want to deal with all these pipelines and all these power plants. And one of the big ones for us is getting rid of Christie's rollbacks on regulations that make it easier to build pipelines. Getting rid of the special water area protections that say you can't drill under a stream within 150 feet. In fact, they actually allow you to drill under streams and wetlands through a general permit where you don't even have to look at environmental impacts. So we want that to be rolled back so that you have to look at environmental impacts, and you have to look at a project holistically and cumulative impacts. Because right now under these rules, and that's why they need 54 stream crossings for Southern Reliability Link, instead of looking at the entire impact of all the drilling and all the impacts from it. And to get to really get to a strong, you know, green jobs program and moving us forward. So I wanted to go on to the next. Why? So I'm going to end it here because I think other people are going to talk about the impacts from it. But I just wanted to leave you with why we're here. We're all in it together. 9 million people in New Jersey. We're all suffering from the impacts of climate change, from air pollution, from destructive storms and flooding. And we have to stand together in one voice to tell the governor, enough. You have to do your job. Your job as the head of the state is to protect public health and safety. We have an environmental health emergency with climate change. And he has the authority to act, and he needs to act now. He can say all he wants about why he cares about climate change. Unless he acts, then he's no different than Chris Christie. And that's why we're here, because we've got to get him to stop the Southern Reliability Link and stop those power plants. You know, there's an old saying that I love. It's an old FDR story where he was at a meeting with Jane Addams and Walter Reuther on talking about Social Security. And at the end of the meeting, he said to them, I'm on your side, make me do it. Well, we need to make this governor listen to us and make him do it. Our future and our planet depends on it. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. My name is Doug O'Malley. I'm the director of Environment New Jersey. And being in a room like this tonight reminds me of some of the first meetings of this organization when it was not... I believe the name, and Agnes, correct me if I'm right, responsible people,
responsible pipelines.
Right. And so I think what we've learned the last 3 years is that in this county and in this state, there's not really responsible pipelines.
No.
Pipelines leak. They are a global warming disaster, and they're being foisted upon us in truly unprecedented fashion. And I think, and I just wanted to thank again Linda Powell, who's been leading the fight against NESI, for coming down here. In that fight here, because we're all in this together. And obviously, this is not just a fight here in New Jersey, this is a fight all around the country. And our effort to get a moratorium on fossil fuel infrastructure, there are activists, leading this fight against supposed climate leaders like Jay Inslee out in Washington, who announced his campaign for presidency, saying, hey, I'm going to be the climate leader, but he has not moved forward in a moratorium. We saw this with Jerry Brown in California, and obviously we're seeing this right now with the governor. The governor is saying the right things on Twitter, but ultimately, is he doing the right things on the ground? And the answer right now is no. And I wanted to kind of reference some of the work that Empower New Jersey did to put together just a quick map on what the infrastructure impacts will be for these projects if they move forward. And this is not complicated stuff. That being said, there was a lot of time put together into this analysis, and our incredible gratitude to the work of Ken Dulski for quarterbacking this project. But the simple reality is, just like Jeff said, the Christie administration, and Governor Christie, was doubling down on gas and gas power plants and gas infrastructure. They worked to expand our gas infrastructure in the state immensely. And we saw an actually increase in our global warming emissions. That being said, we're about 100 million metric tons. Our power plant emission sector is about 18.5 million metric tons. And then what we're looking at right now is if all these projects move forward, we're going to see a 32% increase. So, you know, forget about, you know, the governor and his commitments. Their Global Warming Response Act says we need to get an 80% reduction by 2050. Science says we need to get there even faster. The research that has come out at the end of the last year was the governor forced the governor to tweet out that statement, you know, saying that we need to do a lot more. And so this in many ways is a very conservative campaign. We are just literally saying you cannot hit your goals if you go up in carbon. And that's what these numbers clearly show, is when we see a 32% increase, 32 million metric tons of increased carbon dioxide in global warming emissions because of these projects. And this obviously impacts the power plant consumption. That's 14 million metric tons right there. It's an increase of 76%. So the math just doesn't add up. And I think the other important aspect here is that we are looking at a massive increase in methane, which is 86 times more damaging than carbon dioxide. So, you know, if this is a math equation, this should be pretty simple. And again, going back to the political will that Governor Florio showed with those incinerators are under construction, and the governor said, no, we're gonna stop them. So this is, you know, the governor of New Jersey has incredible power. We need to square the circle and say, look, if we're gonna reduce emissions, we can't build these. And I think there's a very important reason, let's go to the next slide, if you're sitting there and saying, well, I care about the here and now. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I care about the here and now. Well, you should still care a lot, because carbon dioxide, obviously is a pollutant without a doubt. But the impact of natural gas more broadly is having health impacts right now. And so just talking about the impact of gas, I referenced methane as being 86 times more potent. But I think there's a little bit of a misnomer that's out there that says, well, we're retiring all these coal plants, and that's going to get us there. We've seen this time and again, and unfortunately, we've seen this from our decision makers, even the commissioner of DEP saying, yeah, I think gas is a transition fuel. It is a bridge. You know, that's language we heard two decades ago, even a decade ago. You know, that language should not be on the lips of any elected official who cares about climate change. And that's, unfortunately, I think, some of the mindset that's still out there that says, well, we're going to shut down our coal plants, but as long as we move to gas, that's going to be better. No, we are seeing very clearly our math of Empower New Jersey showing if you just transition to gas, you're going to see carbon emissions go up, and you're going to see methane emissions go through the roof. Again, more than 40 million metric tons of methane. That's absurd. And that's the kind of the hard math that we are forcing this administration to look at. I started to talk about the impact of public health. I want to move on to that slide right now, because I think this is the thing that, obviously everyone in this room gets the danger of climate change. Not everybody else gets that. But, when you see a power plant, whether you're on the turnpike or the parkway, everyone gets it. That's not good for us. That's not good for our public health. That's not good for our lungs. And so I think this has been one of the most powerful arguments against the compressor station, is that this is not just a carbon emitter. This is an emitter of dangerous emissions that are going to impact our public health right now. And it's literally in our backyards. And that's I think, one of the most scary aspects, is that, a few years ago, we would watch movies like Gasoline and Gasoline 2, and we say, we're gonna keep Gasland in Pennsylvania. We're gonna fight that, but that's not gonna impact us. Well, Gasland is in New Jersey. Yeah. And these are the projects, and I again wanted to thank both Rita and John for your fights over the last 3 years, because these are our projects that are impacting our public health right now. And obviously everyone in this room knows that, that's why you're here. Our argument, obviously, to our administrators, to our legislators, and obviously the governor, the Board of Public Utilities, is that if you care about public health, you cannot permit these, because they are going to impact us. And we already are suffering from tremendous impacts from air pollution. So, I don't think most people have a concept of hazardous air pollutants or HAPs. We don't talk the language of DEP, we don't talk nitrogen oxide and sulfur dioxide, but we do know the language of asthma. We do know the language of cardiac arrest. And right now in New Jersey, a majority of our counties fail for ozone. So we already have a huge issue. We've seen progress on particulates, partially because of work and partially because of the litigation in New Jersey against EPA and other states. We've not seen progress on ozone. We are still massively out of compliance with the old EPA standard, and we know that science demands an even tighter standard. And we also know that this is not some esoteric issue. We have more than 700,000 individuals in the state that suffer from asthma, 166,000 children. And on the hot summer days, that's when we're most likely to have asthma attacks. There's a direct correlation between an increase in temperature in ozone and asthma attacks and premature death. And I think that's one of just the kind of scary realities you don't want to think about too much, but by breathing in the air, you are more likely to have a cardiac arrest than you are if you do not have high levels of ozone. So we, you know, it's not rhetoric for us to say that our air pollution is killing us, it is. Let's just go to the next slide, because it hits on the fact that this is not just a question of, you know, is this gonna be an issue that affects us? This is gonna be an issue that affects our children, because we're talking about these pipelines being, and power plants being a sunk infrastructure. They're gonna be around for 30 to 40 years at minimum. And that's obviously going to have a direct impact. And in medical expense, and this is one of the other arguments, is that you know we obviously see you know a whole industry around fighting asthma that costs a lot of money. You know, when a parent can't go to work, or you know a kid has to be in the hospital, and that happens. And fortunately, my children don't have asthma, but a lot of kids do. That's beyond an economic cost. That's a psychological impact. And you know that's something that should not be forgotten in this fight, is that we are fighting this against climate change, we're fighting to save our planet, we're also fighting to save our children. And that's a message, obviously, that we want to drive home. So with that, I want to turn it over to Matt Smith from Food and Water Watch to bring us home, to figure out what we can do. Because that's what, obviously, we all care about. This isn't just about educating ourselves, it's about creating political change. Matt.
Thanks, everyone, for coming out tonight. As Doug said, my name is Matt. I'm an organizer with Food and Water Watch. We're a national nonprofit group, but our office here is based in New Brunswick, New Jersey. Also from Food and Water Watch, New Jersey, the crowd is Jocelyn. Jocelyn's going to wave to folks. Jocelyn. Jocelyn's organizing primarily here in South Jersey. And then we have staff in Central and North. It's an amazing opportunity we have in front of us. You know, when we look at the words climate crisis, most times we associate like a negative connotation with the word crisis, but when you look at the definition of crisis, the Latin root actually means a point in which the existing conditions can no longer continue. Change is inevitable. So I think our job is to make sure that in this moment where change is coming, that we're a force for making a change towards the positive, because we know what the alternative looks like. If we don't stop these fossil fuel projects, if we continue with the status quo, not only will our health be at risk in our economy, but literally the future of our society is at risk. We can just go back one slide. Sure. And when we talk about the economy, it's also an exciting moment right now. Who in the crowd has heard anything about the Green New Deal proposal?
Never heard of it.
Brian's from the labor movement. I guarantee he's heard of it. I'm being sarcastic. But really what it symbolizes is that we don't have to pick between jobs and the environment, right? And actually, by moving towards a green energy economy, we can have more jobs. And more economic potential. In fact, right now, solar installer is the highest, it's the most amount of job openings in the country right now is the position of solar installer. And that, with New Jersey only producing a small fraction, less than 4% of our energy from renewable sources, imagine the job potential if we were to get to 100% renewable energy, which we need to do. It's immense. We know that currently, even with those small numbers, clean electricity jobs already outstrip fossil fuel jobs 5-1. Things like energy efficiency, solar, wind, alternative vehicles, all of these things are not only good for the planet, but they're good for us. When we talk about transitioning to 100% renewable in New Jersey, there was a big study done by a really smart person out of Stanford University, Mark Jacobs, and he assessed the total job potential for every state if we transition to 100% renewable, and we would see in New Jersey a net increase in jobs related to the energy sector of over 130,000 new jobs through that transition. So we can address both. We can address our environmental and climate crisis while we address the economic crisis and economic inequality that's persisted since the recession in 2008. And we look at nationwide, we're talking more than 500,000 jobs just to get to the goal of reducing greenhouse gases by 80%. And what we really need to do is address this dynamic and be very clear about this point, because one of the biggest oppositions to facilitating this transition to a clean energy economy is a small sliver of organized labor who are really pushing back against this. They are showing up to public hearings and advocating for these pipeline projects. Many of us have seen them there. It's not all unions, right? And the Empower New Jersey Coalition is very pro-union. We believe workers have the right to organize on the job to improve their conditions and make sure they have dignified work at a living wage job. But it can't come at the expense of the rest of us and our ability to live in a healthy environment. And so we need to be clear about this point, that this is not about jobs in the environment. We can actually address both at the same time through transitioning off of fossil fuels and onto clean renewables. So now we can go to the next slide, because this is the stuff that I mostly like to talk about, which is, you know, who in the room needs to be convinced that fossil fuels and building all these pipelines and power plants are a bad thing in New Jersey? Is anyone not convinced of that point yet? Right? So we're all there. So I think the big question is, how do we do it, right? How do we affect this change? And that's sort of the basis of why the Empower New Jersey Coalition formed. For as long as I've been active in the environmental movement, which is about 6 years here in New Jersey, most of what we've done is fighting these projects one-off, right? We've done an incredible job, right? Partnering with groups, Linda Bernadette Barber's group in central New Jersey, fighting the Nessie compressor station. And just before I forget, they have a critical public hearing on Monday, this coming Monday, the 18th. It's the last state hearing on this proposed compressor station in Franklin Township. And a massive new pipeline that would be connected to it that would run right through the Rowden Bay to an interconnection in the Rockaways. This is a terrible idea for so many different reasons, many have been outlined here. So if anyone's available to join, if you want to just announce the time and date.
Yep. We're having a rally at 5 o'clock.
Stand up.
We're going to be a rally at 5 o'clock, and it's going to be a rally and press conference at 5 o'clock. The hearing starts at 6, and you know, you can come anytime. You can get there, and you can hand in written statements. You also have letters in the back if you want to sign a letter, ask them to deny the water permits. We were out at Rockaway last week at a hearing, and the people there are still recovering from Sandy, and they want to dig up all this waste that settled under the what we call Raritan Bay. They call the New York Harbor, and you know, even the effects on the workers there, you know, it's a temporary job, and they're going to be dealing with all these toxins that have settled underneath the seabed, and they want to dig all this up and churn it up in the water again. So if you can come out, that would be great. If not, sign a letter. You can also send in statements. We have talking points printed out, and it's also on our website, which is on the literature in the back.
Thank you. I think it's important to recognize, as part of these three powerful women in the front row have been organizing to defend their community, with a huge critical public hearing coming up just in a few days, you know, they took the time to be here tonight and support this fight here in Burlington County. And I think that's where we need to go. We need to start acting like a movement. There's this brilliant study that was published by a sociologist named Erica Chenoweth. The conclusion that she found after studying over 100 years worth of social movements, nonviolent civil resistance movements, everything from overthrowing authoritarian regimes to enacting civil rights protection here in the US, was that if you can activate just 3.5% of a population of a place, a country, on an issue, that those social movements are undefeated in that 100-year history. I always thought you needed a majority of people on your side, right? Because that's how we're told democracy works, right? You get 51%, you win. Not the case with social movements. So, you know, I think part of it is, do we need to grow? Absolutely. We need to be having conversations with our friends, our neighbors, our coworkers, our family members, and move them along. And every step forward they take counts. But we also need to realize that we have enough people that agree with us already today. And if we start acting like our lives are on the line, then and acting like a movement and being there for each other, this is a fight we can win right now. So the first thing we can do in terms of acting as one is contacting the governor. He is the only elected representative in the state of New Jersey who has the authority to stop all 13 of the projects that Jeff outlined in the presentation tonight. We need him to exercise that authority and enact this emergency moratorium on fossil fuel projects. So we have a phone number here. You can call him. There's also a flyer in the back. Every single Monday, we're doing something called Moratorium Mondays, where we are sort of like touring around the state and identifying one particular project. So this Monday is the SRL pipeline, where we educated all of our respective organizational networks about this project and then called on the governor to enact this moratorium. Next Monday, we're doing the NESI project because it lines up with the state hearing. But every Monday, if folks can put a reminder in their calendar to call the governor and ask him to enact this moratorium, we need to get to 200 calls in order to grab the administration's attention. And I think if all of us leave this room and not only commit to making the call each Monday ourselves, but getting even just two additional people, two friends, family members, coworkers, or neighbors to make those calls every Monday, that we can really bring this to the forefront of the governor's agenda. The other thing we can do is contact our state representatives and county freeholders. We need them weighing in with the governor's office as well to support this demand for a moratorium. The report that was published at the, I forget the date he published it, but it was in January. And but that report, which is has an executive summary, so you don't have to read all 46 pages, but it has all of the facts and information that you need on each of the projects. So if you're the type of person that wants to do your homework and research and understand before you pick up the phone and make that call, you can download the report from empowernewjersey.com. There's also a ton of other resources on here. We have our petition. We have our call number. We have a coalition sign-on form. So if you're a member of an organization, or if you have friends who are a member of an organization, whether it's a community garden club to, you know, a political organization, to a place of worship or faith, we welcome all groups, and we need to sort of grow the amount of groups who are participating in the coalition. So you can find all of those resources at empowernewjersey.com. Hopefully everyone signed the petition on the way in. It is on the back table if you haven't yet signed it, along with our flyers. And we can go to the next slide. The other thing we need to do is get social. So, I'm not the most tech savvy, social media savvy person in the world, but we do make it fairly easy. If you sign the petition, we'll add you to our email list. So every Monday, we give you just sample Facebook posts and tweets with hashtags and things that I don't even understand, but they come right to your inbox, and all you have to do is copy and paste it into your social media account and hit post, and it makes it really easy for you. But basically, we need to create this environment that wherever the governor goes, whether he's in his office and his phone's ringing, whether he's checking Facebook or his policy team's checking Facebook and they're seeing people tweeting about him, or whether he's trying to make a speech at a conference on energy infrastructure, and we're there to greet him with dozens of our friends and actually even interrupt his speech and urge him to take the action that all of us need for a livable future. We need to be that, there's this line that's, you know, might not be as big or as powerful as our position, but if we can be the mosquito in the tent. Has anyone tried to go to sleep in a tent when there's a mosquito in there? You can't do it. It's impossible. Unless you're like very sedated. So we need to be the mosquito in the tent of Governor Murphy's tent and stay after him wherever he goes. Can we go to the next slide? So we talked about the report. There's also a project website. This is one of them on the Medicaid power plant fight. But really, I think what we want to do now is just transition into a discussion, right? We are not the only ones with all of the information. We don't have a monopoly on good ideas and information, right? This needs to be an exchange. So why don't we open it up for ideas, questions, and conversation. And you know, again, thank you all so much for making the time to be here tonight.
Y'all want to thank Brian and Heather.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Brian, Heather, and New Jersey Revolution Radio for broadcasting tonight's presentation out to the airwaves and amplifying our message.
Our pleasure. And remember, we were the crossroads of the revolution, and we're not going to be the crossroads of the pipeline.
So, I know. This is a New Jersey crowd. People have got to be have questions or things they want to say, right? We're not known for our story.
I'd like to know if there is any opinion yet formed on the new the Atlantic City, the Atlantic County 300, Finance Commissioner?
Well, there's a couple of people that have been nominated.
No, somebody was appointed.
Just last night he was appointed.
I haven't seen the new person. The old person was pretty bad. There have been a couple of decent people who have been appointed since the, you know, for people who don't know the story, but we had the commissioner originally voted down the South Jersey Gas Pipeline. And then Nancy, the half-Wittenberg, approved it herself and sued, and they remanded it back. And then Christie started replacing people. And so some of the new county people, the new Camden County person and the new Cape May are better. I don't know the new Atlantic person.
Do you know the name, G?
Yeah, it's
I-R-I-C-K. Yeah, I saw the name, but I don't know much about it. I know the other person was terrible. So.
I know. I think he voted for the pipeline, so. I was just curious if there was any word out on
it. Or did that the judge?
I just had a question.
If you guys could use the microphone, because I don't think they can hear a little bit in the back, we appreciate that. Thanks. If you can't get up for it, then we can bring it to you.
No.
How about this one?
No, you can. Okay, there you go.
Well, this just was when Governor Murphy was confronted and asked about the moratorium. He said, are you asking the governors of Oklahoma and Texas?
Yes.
What's that all about?
Yeah. He said that more than once.
Yes.
He actually has said that a couple of times. He said that in Princeton, he said. And, you know, my response is, well, what makes you different if you don't put a moratorium in place? He also, one of our members is actually active in fighting the power plant up in the Meadowlands, caught him going into a meeting and about, will DP give out the permits or will he deny it? Will he stop the plant? And his response was, I don't call balls and strikes, it's up to the DEP. And the most powerful governor in the country, he is not only the umpire, he's the team manager, he's the team owner. And so I think that's why it's up to us to really come out with the pressure and show up where he is or then get towns to pass resolutions in favor. Because again, he has that authority and that's where we need to go. We don't need to worry about Senator Sweeney or the legislature, we just need, you know, the governor. And so for some reason he thinks that just because he's not Chris Christie or he's not, you know, the governor of Oklahoma, that he's doing the right thing. And, you know, as you've heard, his silence, you know, on the SRL has been deafening. Except for it hasn't been because he does events all the time in Latin America.
And, you know, I think it's important to realize that, like, because Murphy has done some good things on clean energy development, that he's created an image that he's a green governor, and he's riding the one or two good things that he's done to sort of, you know, invisibilize the 13 plus other, you know, dozens of other bad things that, he's allowing to happen. And, you know, this is all part of his deflection strategy, right? Pay attention to Texas and Oklahoma, you know, focus on this. And, you know, he also said in that same conference, you know, notice how I didn't tell anyone to sit down and shut up yet. Well, that was a famous Chris Christie line. So he's trying to just deflect attention onto anyone but himself. And so in addition to holding him accountable, we need to educate people, because people, I think, generally don't know that this is happening and that it's happening on Governor Murphy's watch. And so that's why these forums are important. That's why all of us should feel empowered after this event to each one teach one, right? Take this information and teach at least one more person about the 13 fossil fuel projects that Governor Murphy is not doing anything to stop yet.
When I worked for Mondo, it was five for free, so you're going to find it.
I have a quick thought. Why don't we call the governors of Oklahoma and Texas and tell them that Governor Murphy told us to call? Because we need a moratorium. So.
But if you are in any way tweeting, if you're in the Twitterverse or whatever, I set notifications for Governor Murphy, and if he tweets about anything, I make up something and says, oh, that's great, but why don't you do this? And then I hashtag, you know, stop this, stop it, yes, you know, change the chair. I just hashtag the heck out of everything and try and be that mosquito in the tent.
Now, the governor staff has said to us it's an issue that he does talk to staff about climate change. I guess we finally found the one issue he does talk to staff about.
The other quick thing to add here is that, like, all kind of, you know, I'm always amazed because all politicians have to develop a thick skin, and some have thicker skin than others. The governor is very sensitive to public pressure, and, you know, we have heard directly from the governor's staff that they are noticing that they're getting calls on this issue. They're noticing that they're getting bird-dogged. You know, the governor, you know, tries to kind of use charm offensive, right? So, you know, Janet Glass up in, you know, don't guess the Meadowlands, I believe is a Sierra Club member in North Bergen. We literally approached the governor in North Bergen for an event. The governor came over and engaged in basically trying to convince her, oh, I'm going to take care of it. And, you know, we've unfortunately seen this now for years where the governor has said, you know, there's a tough decision. I'm gonna allow the energy master plan to take care of it. You know, I'm not going to say anything about this power plant or the pipeline. We're going to wait for the energy master plan. Well, guess what? The energy master plan is supposed to come out in a matter of weeks. It's supposed to be done by June 1st. And so this is kind of, you know, there is urgency, obviously, for all this, but there's urgency a lot for the broader fights because, you know, the governor just needs to feel the heat.
I was just curious on the SRL. I know that the road permits were supposedly given. Did they ever actually start doing any construction? You start tearing up roads?
Not in Burlington County, but in Ocean County. They're building miles. And one of the things I think that also, because one of the reasons this moratorium is so important, you see those 13 plans. If we don't get the governor to stop it, there's 13, you know, different proposed projects. We're going to see a gas plant being proposed at the end of the SRL pipeline in, you know, Fork and River, where the old, you know, Oyster Creek nuclear power plant is. And we're going to see, we stopped a gas power plant 3 years ago in Hillsboro next to the DNR canal. You know, we're going to start seeing them coming more and more. So if they think New Jersey is not going to do anything or fight back, we're going to see more gas coming in, more pipelines, more power plants, and everything else. So, you know, that's why this battle is so important. And, you know, they're you know, it's such a joke, they say they're doing it at their own risk. But if we win our court case, you think they're going to pay for it? You're going to pay for it. You are the ratepayers for New Jersey Natural. Look, last year they came in for a $23 million rate hike to help pay for the SRL, and the BPU turned them down. But they're going to come back because it wasn't built. If they get it built, they're coming back. It's like we have to, it's sort of like we have to pay for our own executioner. You know, that here we are, you know, fighting our governor, using resources that very few people have to go to court. Here we are fighting, you know, to save the state from fossil fuel infrastructure and deal with climate change, and we have to fight our own government. It's just, you know, it's mind-boggling at times.
And if they put these pipes in the ground at their own risk and lose in the pinelands, we lose.
Yeah.
If they put them in front of Patty's house and she gets a sinkhole, she loses. You know, I mean, there's just so many implications and consequences, even if they do put them in at their own risk.
And those things happen. When they were drilling the Kinder Morgan pipeline under the Delaware River, a road collapsed from the sinkhole that was created from the drilling. When they built the Kinder Morgan line up in, coming through West Milford, coming down steep slope, it rained, and a big mudslide came off the right-of-way, and Lake Lookout became covered with 6 inches of muck, which is a nice recreation lake. So, no, there are serious consequences from the drought.
Recreational muck.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate the presentation. It was really great information for that. I know I've known Matt for years, and he's an awesome actor. He's a great person to follow in his cause. And you guys, thank you very much. My question is, I guess, I do, as well as labor work, I've done some social justice work. And I'd like to hear a little bit about the impact on our more urban communities, namely Camden, Newark, Atlantic City. And I know I've seen activists with the water problems there. But is, you know, the air quality is obviously affected, but is there mobilization going on in those areas? What's been the response from officials about that areas? And what's the focus of your organizations on helping these disabled?
Well, the Meadowlands power plant is in a community that's 70% Hispanic and is an environmental justice community. Look, they don't build power plants in Short Hills. And, no. You know, and they're not going to be putting a pipeline through Rumson where the governor lives. So all projects, I mean, I have a list of every power plant in New Jersey and every incinerator in New Jersey, and they all are in communities that are either communities of color or low income or both. And that's
or rural, like ours.
Well, you know, I'm talking about power plants.
Oh, okay.
You know? So, you know, those facilities, the chemical plant, they go into those communities. And yes, in pipelines too. We fought a pipeline a few years ago. We lost it going right through the middle of Jersey City to bring gas to New York. They're always targeted. And some of those communities have some of the worst air quality in the nation. You know, if you're in Linden or Elizabeth, based on health-based standards, the air quality on a normal day is 18 times the normal health-based standard. 18 times. And yet people have to, and then that's where we end up putting in more facilities and more pipelines and more everything else. So it is a very big equity issue, as is climate change, because if you tend to be the poorer community. People on Long Beach Island, they have plenty of money to rebuild, but the people in Union Beach or in Newark do not have that. So it is a big situation.
One more point on the, just like what is happening. So the answer is not enough. You know, we've tried to do some organizing in North Bergen. One of the particular challenges we ran into is that unlike the 46 towns in Bergen County who were like, yes, come to our town, educate us, we're with you on this. The mayor, who's also a state senator, which is now illegal to do both, but who's grandfathered into it, has basically tried to shut us down at every chance. The first time we tried to table at a farmer's market in North Bergen, he sent one of his minions over and said, you can't do that here. Right, and picked us out and said, you can't do a petition here. We did one forum in a Spanish-speaking church in North Bergen Township. Since that time, Sacco and his people have gotten to that church and we're not allowed to hold events there now. So this kind of like disenfranchisement of this marginalized, as Jeff said, 70% Spanish-speaking community is very real, and it's a real obstacle. We are trying to actively break through that. So this spring, and as the weather gets nice, we're going to be again going door to door in North Bergen. We are going to find a venue to hold a forum, even if it's at outside in a park or in a community garden. And you know, we're not going to allow this problem to persist. But in order to overcome that sort of resistance, we do need more people. We need volunteers who are willing to come out even for an hour or two to help knock on doors. If you can speak Spanish, or if you have a friend who can speak Spanish, that's a real asset to our movement. So, you know, these are real challenges that we need to figure out collectively how we're going to work through.
Thanks. Just the last thing to say on this, this is about power, and it's no accident that these companies are targeting environmental justice neighborhoods and environmental justice communities, and then they're also targeting communities like Bordentown and other communities in Burlington County that aren't necessarily designed to immediately fight back against us. You know, again, we're not seeing these projects at Short Hills and Rumson. We're not seeing them in the Tonia suburbs. There's a direct reason why our communities are being targeted. And if anything, the experience with Penn East shows that, you know, when you do go after more higher income communities, they fight back, right? And so obviously we are united here, but there's no reason why Penn East should not get built and the SRL should. And so this is where we cannot kind of allow them to pick us off, and that's the whole concept of Empower New Jersey is we are not playing games. We are not saying, well, we won't fight you on this if you give us this. Everything hurts everybody, and that's part of the reason we did the analysis to show that this is not about pitting one community against the other. Against another. So,
by the way, just to power plants in Bordentown Township about 10 years ago. Had local battles. And of course, at that time, the mayor of Bordentown was for them. But he's gone now.
Right, yeah, we all need to stick together because it does affect us all. I mean, Station 206 is being built next to track rock. They're going to make explosions next to the gas. That's crazy. I don't want to drive by that and get blown up.
And Penny's pipeline is going right past the Walpay Mountain Quarry.
Yeah,
Walpay
Mountain. Yeah, it's crazy.
Do you have a question?
I have a few just sort of like research questions. The first one is, how do township students tackle the dollars of gas companies? Like, how does that...
How do townships stand up against the money of the gas companies?
Yeah.
Well, part of it is you could ask experts behind you, but part of it is everybody, you know, one of the reasons when we organize on pipelines or power plants, we want to get the towns involved, is because, one, you need them because they can talk to the legislature and the governor, but also they can help come up with resources. And so think about it this way. Even though it's cost the towns money to fight this, they have more resources than a grassroots environmental group or a citizens group. And so their activism and the work that they've done in the council has gone a long way in fighting these pipelines because they can bring in their attorneys and hire experts. And, you know, I would have a hard time finding the money to go monitor the air and water, but they can, and so they can create that baseline data. And that's why it's so critical to work, you know, from the bottom, you know, up to get your town council, your mayors all involved and having them work together with the other mayors so they can not only have a unified message to fight, but also help share those resources to be able to go to court. And, you know, they were able to go to court on the compressor station. We didn't have the resources. So, you know.
But it's a fight.
It is.
And some taxpayers are not for it.
So that's why.
And many people have to fight.
Well, that's why you need to make sure you tell your neighbors when people start complaining they spent X number of dollars. Well, guess what? If you spent $100,000 on a lawsuit, it's a lot cheaper than having to buy all that hazmat equipment if that pipeline gets built. Or, God forbid, something happens in that community and there's an accident. And, you know, go Google this, but, you know, every month there's a pipeline explosion in this country, a major pipeline. And about every 6 months there's a compressor station that also goes up. So don't think these things don't happen. I've been to Burlingame, you know, outside of San Francisco. I've been to Bellingham in Washington. I've been to some of those places that have been devastated by it. So it is the best investment you can make as a citizen in your town, supporting your local officials with doing the right thing. And so when neighbors complain about it, just say, what's the price of your child? What's the price of that school? What's the price, you know?
But neighbors do complain, and taxpayers get up at committee meetings and say, why are we spending money on this? And then, thank God, we have elected officials that are standing with us and saying, this is why. There's some of the reasons that Jeff just enumerated.
So when townships do testing on air quality and water, then they actually have a place where they can post, like, so other counties or other townships can go through the same process to like benefit from that?
This is new.
Individuals buy kits or?
Yeah, this is brand new.
Yeah, we're working with researchers.
Actually, a lot of these initiatives to do air quality, water quality testing are extremely expensive. I was lucky in that my committee is very cooperative, and I had a handful of expert residents who jumped into this project this year, and we were able to find a, I don't want to call it a grassroots organization, but they're in Western Pennsylvania, a group funded by Carnegie Mellon, and they specialize in helping towns like Chesterfield who have a compressor station or other infrastructure there. And a lot of what they propose is they will, instead of saying, okay, it's $100,000 for us to come out and do all this testing for you, they take a do-it-yourself approach. So they educated our committee, coached us, rented us the equipment, and this was quite a lot of work this past year, but we got volunteers to take the air quality testing system, and we divided the town into sectors around the compressor station, got volunteers to do the health assessments, and this ended up being like maybe almost one-tenth the cost of doing it the regular conventional way. And I think one of the next things I want to do, and you really, you know, ask a good question here, is I would like me and my task force to get out and educate other townships on how to do this, because I think this is going to end up being so important.
The state of New Jersey should be making the gas companies put money into an escrow account so that they can bring in independent people to do this work, instead of all the environmental analysis, whether it's at FERC or at the DEP, is being done by consultants that work for the polluter or the gas company, which is the fox, studying the hen house to see if it's safe. And so, I mean, that's why it's important that they're doing it, but that's one of the changes we really need to see in the state that we've been talking about for 20 years to try to get DEP to do, is to actually require independent analysis paid for by the polluter, but overseen by DEP.
And along those lines, where is the research being done on methane levels effects? I think that I am hearing it from all around me, but where is it being tested, and are gas companies, or are they, since they're laying these things, are they accountable for their testing or the levels?
A lot of it's mostly being done by universities and others independently. I was at the Delaware River Basin Commission meeting today, and I brought out a report Rochester University did that shows that if you live within a mile of a well pad where there's fracking going on, that the instances of skin rashes, asthma attacks, urinary tract infections, and so many other things are exponentially higher than just a few miles further away because of those impacts. And, methane is a very dangerous.
That's settled science that methane is dangerous.
Yeah, but there are studies being done on the human impacts.
Right.
Yeah, and there was the person who sort of like looked at as the like expert of record on methane is Dr. Robert Howard from Cornell University, and we actually have to update our PowerPoint. We took a very conservative assessment on methane leakage, mostly because. We just wanted to be conservative in our analysis, but Howard's latest study actually finds that methane leakage rates from the well pad where they're drilling all the way to the point of consumption of the power plant is almost double of what we have. They're at 5% now, whereas we said 2.6. So in actuality, these numbers could be a lot higher. I don't really like the statement that natural gas is worse for the climate than coal, because it kind of like pits ourselves against each other. Like, none of them are good. Coal produces a lot of other pollutants that are disastrous for human health, but the thing with gas, which is the real problem, is that the gas that's fracked has that 5% leakage rate, and methane is 86 times more potent than carbon in the 20-year time frame. Over a 100-year time frame, carbon is more impactful on climate change. It has a greater greenhouse gas effect. But the 20 years now is the critical time, right? We're being told just in November of 2018, and then again in December with the U.S. National Climate Assessment, that we have 12 years to reduce greenhouse gas emissions by nearly half in order to avoid critical tipping points in which we can't reverse the effects of climate change. So with methane having the worst impact in the next 20 years, that's what makes gas so dangerous, and that's why we need to start by not approving any new gas projects, and then, as Jeff talked about, putting in standards and rules in place to draw down greenhouse gas emissions from existing sources.
That choice is a choice between root canal or colonoscopy.
Well, thank you again. Oh, you have more questions?
It's about renewables and recycling in New Jersey. Where would I find information when I'm researching? Where recyclables are processed, like plants, and what is the effect on the environment?
You mean as far as the recycling?
Like I know we were shipping it to China, but now...
Well, right now we have a serious problem. And one of the things, if you really want to reduce fracking and climate impacts, ban plastic bags, because that comes from fracking. The gas liquids are used for those plastics. So that would be one way to help deal with that. Right now, recycling in New Jersey has actually dropped a 50% mandate and goal that we actually did hit in 1992. We've backslided from, and part of it is lack of enforcement. Part of it is we've got governors, including this one, stealing the recycling education money. And so right now, there's not as many markets for certain products as there once were. We need to create them again, or ban those products that can't be recycled, like, you know, single strip, like straws and plastic bags, which I think would be the best way to go.
Just for your information, and I will get you the date, but Chesterfield Township, actually it's one of the Hindu organizations, is going to be sponsoring a workshop on recycling in Burlington County, and they will go through all this history, what some of our issues are in Burlington County, how to properly recycle. So we're trying to encourage, you know, residents who are interested to come out to hear that. And I'm really happy that they organized that and they're doing it. So I will let you know by the date.
I just heard from a few different sources. I haven't researched it. But that growing hemp, you can make a lot of things out of hemp, including plastic-like materials, which are biodegradable. And while they're growing, they take in carbon dioxide and let off oxygen.
Yeah,
it's much easier to grow than something like tobacco. So, you know, that's something that we could think about in terms of using some of our...
Not a fossil fuel.
...food farmland into...
All those plastics are petroleum farms.
We're actually having a cannabis forum down in Pleasantville on April 4th at Mount Zion Church in Pleasantville. We're going to have somebody from Stockton who's directing the minor program there, and we're going to be talking about hemp and cannabis in general from like a patient perspective. So if anyone would like to come to that, you're welcome to.
Jeff, I have a question. You mentioned that you would be going to court in April.
Yes, we have our challenge to the SRL pipeline. Our briefs are due sometime in April. We're working on them right now. So our briefs are going to be filed probably in a couple of weeks. I forget exactly what date, but it's coming up pretty soon.
So then how long after that before the case is...
Well, it takes quite a while. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, you know, Beale Lingwood pulled out. So we have to put in our briefs. Then they respond to our briefs, and then we respond to them. Then after that, it takes a little time, and then there will be oral arguments. So it's still at least a year off before there would be any kind of decision. And that's why we, you know, I talked to the Attorney General's office now 3 weeks ago, and I said, you know, because our attorneys have reached out to try to settle this case by either appealing it, remanding it back, whatever, and the Attorney General said to me, well, we're here representing clients, the Pinewoods Commission and the BPU, and it's up to them. And I'm like, no, you work for the governor and the people. It's, you know, up to the people, you know. And so right now, just so you know, the SRL is no longer Christie's pipeline. It's Phil Murphy's pipeline. And he really cares about climate change, and he's going to do something, and we'll see what happens. But right now, just like he did on the Exxon case where he ran... opposing the Exxon settlement that sold out New Jersey, the $8.9 billion that Christie, you know, settled for $225 million. When we went to court, the end, when we went to New Jersey Supreme Court, it was us not versus Christie, it was us versus Murphy. And then Murphy grabbed the money for the budget too. So we need to, that's why we really need to put this pressure on him and to make sure that he gets it, that he's not going to be able to get away with this.
Come right back to that back table, videotape you, give him your message, and I'll tweet it to him.
So, yes, we need a leader, not a tweeter.
But he's vain, so I think he hates that.
But I'll tell you this, because when we were going nowhere with this administration, I did an op-ed in the Star Ledger about how it was the first administration not to propose one new rule, not to make one appointment for the environmental board. And Senator Torricelli and Senator Menendez sent both of them sent it separately to him privately and said, you know, and the one actually from Menendez said, if you piss off Jeff Tittle, you got a real problem in the state. Torricelli was a little nicer, saying I've worked with him for decades and you better do something. The one from Torricelli that said you better do something, I found out that Murphy himself, because there was that email with the attachment, was then sent to his staff. So he may be thin-skinned, but that's how you reach him. Just like that gnat flying around his head or whatever. But we're going to make sure it's not a gnat, it's a swarm of they're killer bees. If he doesn't act. That's it. Great. I just want to leave you with one thought. Every time we've ever won anything in the state, whether ocean dumping or saving the pinelands or saving the great swamp or anything else, is because of local citizens and people working and standing together and making it happen. So go home safely, and we've got a lot of work to do, so let's save our planet.